Technorama episode 637. We're definitely something. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome aboard the crazy train. If you're coming back, well, get your ticket punched and have a seat. We're getting ready for another episode. I am Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Joining me, as always, right there is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. Did you reorganize our windows again?
I put them on the proper sides. We were all in a mirror alternate universe last time.
I'm doing good. I had to do a couple of things around the house today. I don't mind repairing things, but plumbing is not my forte. I hate
really?
That. That's the worst. I don't like that part. I don't mind.
I can do plumbing.
But I'll give you the quick rundown. It was all fine. I could have replaced the faucet in the kitchen.
Was this your house or was this your cabin?
My home.
Okay.
Yeah, the home at house. And then the kitchen faucet was starting to leak. I was like, okay, it's been there for a long time since probably the previous owners. I'm going to replace it.
Why didn't you just go get the little cartridges?
No. It needed to be replaced.
Okay.
So on the backside, there's a plastic grab handle, around the mount. And, it's supposed to be able to use your hand and unscrew it. No. Where the threads had rusted. So the little nut that's inside the plastic thing fused together. So my good old buddy Dremel came over and I cut it off, was able to take it off. And so it worked, but man, my hands are killing me. I was like, all right, Kim, shake it back and forth just a little bit. Maybe it'll loosen.
Nope. Hope you're wearing proper PPE around your eyes and mask and whatnot.
I was, but when I started using the Dremel, of course, I go to the bathroom and wash my hands. I look in the mirror and there's like black plastic pieces of plastic all over my face.
And it's always those under the sink things. They're uncomfortable. So you're lucky Kim was there, because a one person job for those things is no fun, because you're way in the cabinet and you're back. You got your hand up under the sink to try and reach these things. Like, oh, I need my channel locks.
I know. Well, yeah. And talking about being uncomfortable, it's obviously a little drop from the cabinet down to the floor. You know what I did? I went outside and got some the cushions off the outdoor furniture, laid it down.
That's actually a good idea.
Yeah, so it worked. I didn't feel the wood stuck in my back, but still, my hands are a little raw from trying to turn that stupid thing. But anyway, I did it.
I don't know about you, but yeah, my hands are, now that they're over 50, turning screwdrivers and grabbing pliers for extended period of time really hurts.
It does.
It's getting to the point where
a little bit.
I pay a young kid to do that.
Well, believe me, I was considering calling in the plumber, but no, I didn't. I did it. I could do it.
Good job.
It wasn't that hard. I don't mind. I actually really enjoy fixing things, trying to find a solution to something just tangible I can put my hands on and, fix. I really enjoy doing that, but
I think we talked about that plumbing a while ago with the, plumbing and the carpentry and whatnot. All right, we have some feedback. Let's play the feedback song.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
Do we?
Every day.
Every day.
Reach right ahead and pull one out.
Find out.
Those letters. I love those letters.
Yeehaw.
Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy. Mailman.
The feedback hoedown.
Yeah.
All right. We have feedback from the question of the week last week. What item today is prohibitively expensive, but will be mainstream in 60 years from now? So that would be in the year 2081. Yikes.
In the year 2081.
I will be dead.
Maybe. You never know what happens,
Maybe.
The singularity comes around.
If my hands hurt now.
Yeah. Well, they'll be replaced by robotic claws.
Okay. I'm looking at,
What about Zoidberg?
The clamps. Looking at the Technorama page, we have a response from Sweet Steve. He says, 3D printing at molecular level. It's so expensive today that they haven't even invented it yet.
Right.
In 60 years from now, you can print everything and anything for a fraction of the cost. Wait, a fraction of not invented yet is... I don't know what that is.
It's like, I'm going to pay you what I paid you last week, or double, zero.
You can even print yourself a set of new lungs, and you probably will need a new pair every 12 months or so. Yes, because there's nothing like a fresh set of lungs.
Hey, it's always that replacing them part. You know, we go...
We give you the printer for free, but it's the we'll make money on the lungs.
Do you take the new ones and blow them up before you...
It's the installation that'll get you.
That's what I'm talking about.
Not the parts, Kim, it's the labor.
Give me the channel locks.
Get the Dremel. Yeah. My brachial tube is stuck again.
Yeah.
All right. What do you have on your page, sir?
Let's see. That was yours.
No, that was from Technorama.
No, I'm looking at my tab. So question of the week, Brian Parker says PS5, but you still won't be able to find one
60 years from now. That's a good point. We were actually thinking about giving one of those away as a prize at our convention in May, but we can't get our hands on any of them. It's like ridiculous.
You know, I wonder if they control, well, I know there's a chip, issue, shortage in the world right now. So, that might contribute to some of that. I don't know. Do you know why it's backordered?
Yeah. It's just a scarcity right now. And and I know some people, if they do get them, they buy up as many as they can and sell them on the black market for an inflated price. So
yeah, it sucks.
Play fair, everybody. Play fair. Yeah, it's like the Beanie Babies and the Teddy Ruxpin days all over again.
The Cabbage Patch Dolls.
Yeah. They didn't have eBay back then. But, John Miller Jr. says graphics cards for gaming PCs. NVIDIA's sought after offerings are going for as high as $3,000 now. I suspect you'll need to wait 60 years for the prices to stabilize down at a reasonable level.
Yeah. That's what you get for bit mining.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The Bitcoin mining.
That's why everybody uses the graphics card CPUs. You know, to do the bit mining. That's why you can't get them. That's why they're expensive.
NVIDIA is not complaining. Neither are the stockholders.
No, I'm sure they're not. Okay. But
you
can't get product into customers. That's kind of a problem in itself.
You got any more responses?
I do not. But Mike Robison says space travel, which I think will be the case.
Let me look on my page. My page has we have three responses here. My sister says housing in Marquette and lumber.
Yeah, I lumber know. Prices Lumber's are gotten out of crazy control right now.
Yeah. Which is probably why the house, no. People who already own houses are expensive and the people who want to build new houses are expensive. A lot of the new construction market is being driven by the fact that people are working from home. So they're like, oh, I need more space so I can have an official office and then, you know, a place for the in-home gym and whatnot. So they're expanding. They're getting bigger homes. I think that's going to come back and bite us at some point. They're going to go, I got too much house that I bit off more than I can chew.
Oh, well, so, that was the part of the problem with the housing breakdown in 2008.
No, that was
giving out houses that were too big for people to afford.
Right. It was giving out loans that they couldn't afford. Hopefully we're a little smarter and we learn from that, but I'm not going to turn this into a finance show.
Faith is misplaced, my buddy, my friend.
We have one email from Kyle, says the tech that is prohibitively expensive now, but will be cheap in the future is CRISPR, which is the gene editing that they're doing. Possibly quantum computing. I can easily imagine the cost of gene editing to come down in the future because what kind of parents wouldn't want to engineer their own babies? Now, there's a whole discussion around that, you know, ethical behavior and gene diversity, et cetera, et cetera.
I wouldn't.
My kids are already perfect.
No, I mean, yeah. Well, I'm just saying, what would you do? Make him an athlete, make him smart.
The only reason I would see using that is to cure some sort of defect. You know, if they've got,
that's sure. No, I mean that, I but guess.
Where do you draw the line on what's technically a defect? You know,
mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. Who decides that?
It gets a little right. So quantum computers, OTOH, is looking more like the flying car. It's something that sounds cool, costs way too much, and has no reason to be developed for general consumers. By the way, Googling for flying cars these days is interesting. He left us a YouTube link, which I didn't get a chance to play.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch it either, but it looks interesting.
We got a postal mail also.
What?
Yes.
Snail mail?
I got a snail mail from Steve London. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we said, what are you never too old for?
And mail.
And I said, postal mail, getting mail in the postal. So he wrote one. I was like, that was awesome.
Oh, that was pretty nice.
And it sort of necessitates a reply because one of the things he does with some of his friends is sends them a snippet of like an adventure story. You're standing in a field and there's a pathway that goes off to the woods and you know, you see two items at your feet. So I have to continue the story and send him a response in a written mail. So,
but that's pretty cool.
First, I have to decipher his address on the envelope.
Well, we do get snail mail from our buddy Yorga.
Yes, we get.
He's been sending, and that's always a welcome thing.
But nobody's been traveling.
When things are normal, it was nice to get these postal cards from him and where he's going.
We'll send those out again soon when we get traveling. We also have a voicemail. Well, we got one of everything. This is like a grab bag show.
That's right.
This is awesome. Yeah. John Miller Jr. sent us this voicemail.
Yes, this is John Miller Jr. Two things. One, I'm leaving you a voice message because you guys keep nagging me to do it. And two, this call is also in reference to your warranty on your car, on your car's engine. Get back to me on that. Thanks, guys. Later.
I've already got one.
Hey, block that and mark it as spam, Chuck.
I want to. Well, what did the Google translation look like for that, Craig?
I don't know. Let me go look real quick.
I did not.
Yeah, I don't think.
When did he send that in?
Just a little while ago.
Oh, it says, okay. So
yes, this is John Miller Jr. Two things. One, I'm leaving you a voice message because you guys keep nagging me to do it. And two, this call is in reference to your warranty on your car. On your car's engine, get back to me on that.
Wow, thanks, it translated that just perfectly.
Yeah. Yes.
It knows how to sell things. Of course, Google knows how to sell things. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. That was a lot of fun. We will do it again with a question at the end of this show, and we'll read them to you again next week. Call this a bonus week. We had postal mail, voicemail, comments from
an
email. We had comments. Yeah, this was a good week. Bumper crop. Let's do the history thing. What are you doing to my history?
Nothing. I'm just getting rid of a dead bullet.
I hate dead bullets. They never work. All right. This is the 11th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 254 days remaining in 2021. That would be 0 FE hex if you're counting. It would be on this date in 753 BC that Romulus founded Rome. Or was it Rome founded Romulus? I thought there was a Star Trek mention in there somewhere, but we'll let it go.
Yeah. I think this is like the longest bullet on this day in history. So
it'll take us till the next day in history to get it.
Yeah, here we go. The Laguna Copper Plate inscription, the earliest known written document found in what is now the Philippines. The commander-in-chief of Kingdom of Tondo was represented by Honorable Jadeo Dewey, Lord Minister of Payala, pardon from debt, the Honorable Namwaran, and his relations on this date in 900.
So in 900, yes. I remember before there was paper, we wrote on copper plates. Yeah, that's right. And it says, I hereby relieve the Honorable Namwaran of all his debt. Sweet, I filed for Chapter 11.
That's right. I'm hanging this on the wall if it wasn't so heavy.
It was also this date in 1650. The Wingnacourt Aqueduct is inaugurated in Malta.
And it was 59 years ago today that the Seattle World's Fair, also known as Stark. No, I'm kidding. I'm just going to say, let's make a Stark Expo. The Seattle World's Fair Century 21 Exposition opened. It was the first World's Fair in the United States since World War II.
Interesting. There was another one. 1964 and 65, the New York World's Fair opened for the second and final season on this date in 1965. Wasn't that the one used in Men in Black? Hey, old dudes. Might be him. Do those things still fly?
Yeah, I think you're right. Also on April 21st, 1972, astronauts John Young and Charles Duke fly the Apollo 16th Apollo lunar module to the moon's surface, the fifth NASA Apollo program crewed lunar landing.
Not crew as in they were the crew, not that was crew.
Program crew.
C-R-U-D-E.
That's what it says, crude.
I know.
They're crude.
It was very.
They made all kinds of crappy jokes
landing.
In there.
It was a crude landing.
They were making bad jokes, you know, off-color jokes.
Happy birthday goes out on this day to French physicist, astronomer, and mathematician Jean-Baptiste Biot. My French is off tonight, but he was born today in 1774.
And John Muir, Scottish-American environmentalist and author, was born on the same date in 1839.
He invented or he grew Muir Woods.
That's right.
April 21st, 1882, American physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Percy Williams Bridgman was born.
And Russian Swiss chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Paul Keller was born on this date in 1889.
You know, you scared me when you started out with Russian Swiss chemist and we come up with Paul Keller.
No. Not as much as I was scared.
Okay, I know we just had a sad event this past week with Prince Philip passing away, but don't dwell on the past because this Wednesday, the Queen herself turns 95.
Wow.
What a bittersweet week she's having.
Yeah. Also turning 74 today is American singer, songwriter, producer, and actor Iggy Pop.
American actor and producer Tony Danza is 70 years old. He was mentioned in that Elton John song. Hold me closer, Tony Danza.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's exactly right. And also born on the same date in 1979, Scottish actor James McAvoy.
Really? Cerebro was born on this day, too.
He's about 10 years younger than I am.
Listener birthdays today include Kim and Craig's anniversary.
Yay!
That's not a birthday.
It's our 20th anniversary.
On the 21st. So will next year be your golden birthday anniversary? No.
20, yeah.
Your golden anniversary is when you're 50, married for 50 years. And we already mentioned him in the email, the feedback section. Sweet Steve London from Sweden is on the 26th. Happy birthday to all of you. If this is your birthday and you would like to get on the calendar, you go over to... I got to get my Wirecast title up here. Patron birthday. There it is. Go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and we will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And apparently you can put anniversaries in there too. So feel free. And that's the way it was on this day in history for February 17th. Wow, someone fell asleep at the wheel. April 21st.
What? Oh.
2021. Wow.
Hey.
Is this the end of the song yet?
For the record, it wasn't me.
I will take full blame for that one. Let's abort that music. Did it abort? It aborted. Okay. And we will put the title away because it's now news time. And since I didn't read the news story ahead of time, we'll just take a random sampling here.
Bad news, nobody.
Well, maybe.
Hey, by the way, I read somewhere, I'm not sure about this, but on the 20th anniversary as porcelain. It's like, I'm like,
you got to replace the toilet now.
Yeah. Great news, Kim.
Here's your present. A new throne for the queen.
Well, then I saw China and platinum is the modern one.
There's some in there like paper and tin and I don't know.
They yeah. some crumpled up aluminum foil.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well, first news story up we have from SciTechDaily.com says, seeing quadruple, artificial intelligence leads to discovery that can help solve cosmological puzzles. Interesting. I need to make this font significantly larger. Says, with the help of machine learning techniques, a team of astronomers has discovered a dozen quasars that have been warped by a naturally occurring cosmic lens and split into four similar images. Quasars are extremely luminous cores of distant galaxies that are powered by super, super massive black holes. Over the
very
past
impressive four, when you read it like that, by the way.
They are.
Yeah.
They're doubly impressive.
That's right.
That's how you do vocal italics or bold.
Yeah. Italics and bold.
Over the past four decades, astronomers have found about 50 of these quadruply imaged quasars, or quads for short. Oh, my quads are burning. Yeah. Which occur when the gravity of a massive galaxy that happens to sit in front of a quasar splits into a single image into four. The latest study, which spanned only a year and a half, increases the number of known quads by about 25% and demonstrates the power of machine learning to assist astronomers in their search for these cosmic oddities. Which, you know what? That'd be a good name for a podcast. Let's rename that. We'll call this the Cosmic Oddities.
That's it. There's two of them right here.
Quote, the quads are gold mines for all sorts of questions. They can help determine the expansion rate of the universe and help address other mysteries such as dark matter and quasar central engines, says Daniel Stern, lead author of the new study and a research scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Daniel Stern, I love his movies.
What? No.
Home Alone? He was in Daniel Stern?
I don't think that's the same one.
Oh, well, Brian May from Queen has worked on the New Horizons. So how do you know?
Yes, we knew that. Well, go look it up. If it's on his IMDb or Wikipedia page, I'll meet you back here after the podcast.
Hey, no disrespect. I don't think he's that smart.
Just like Joe Messina, right? He was the musician, but he was also like Barack Obama's aide or campaign manager or something.
Yeah.
Not quite. Right. Not the same guy. Okay. All right. There's a wonderful image. If you're not sure how gravitational lensing works, there's a nice graphic for you. You can find that in the show notes. Go to episode 637. Yeah, we're on 7, I think. Over at techchat.com/technorama. I almost blurted out the topic is Trek.
No, not tonight.
Not tonight. Not tonight. A couple nights from now. Oh, we still need to watch Insurrection. Again.
Oh, that's true. Yep. Yes. Which, wait, and again?
Well, I already watched it once, but I didn't take notes.
Oh. All right. So our next story, speaking of space, you know, SpaceX wins a big $2.9 billion contract for the next lunar lander.
I heard about that.
Yeah. So NASA will pay Elon Musk's SpaceX $2.9 million to build a lunar landing system to ferry astronauts to the surface of the moon.
Clarification. So you said million. It's actually $2.9 billion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. That makes much more sense.
You get a bigger rocket.
I'm so sorry. They can send pieces of paper to the moon.
Jeff Bezos was also in the bidding with his space company, and there was a third one. I can't remember what it's called. Diamond, well, or Digitech or something.
Blue Horizon, isn't that Jeff Bezos?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but to be honest with you, I keep going, well, how can they be in the running? I haven't seen anything from them.
Right.
The SpaceX has been in our face with a bunch of cool stuff for the last 10 years.
Dianetics, that was the other one.
Dianetics.
Isn't that the L. Ron Hubbard book?
Yeah,
I'll send you to space with a book.
Yeah. Anyway, so SpaceX was one of the three companies chosen last year to develop the technology for NASA's Human Landing System program. On Friday, NASA announced SpaceX's Starship design had beat out the other two companies for the contract.
We beat this contract.
Yeah, well, I mean, for all intents and purposes, they've got almost a working model, except for the explosion part. That's a bonus, I guess.
A rocket is nothing more than a controlled explosion.
What are the rapid, what do they call it? When it explodes.
Rapid decompression or something. Yeah.
Rapid disassembly.
We built this rocket.
Unscheduled rapid disassembly.
You said Starship. So now we built this rocket on rock and roll. There you go, listener. You now have a song stuck in your head for the rest of the show.
That's right. So anyway, this is the first time the space agency has used a human lander built by a private company, and it marks an important milestone for the agency, as it in recent years depended on for commercial partnerships in its most important missions.
Just for clarification again, the lander is for landing humans. They said they used a human lander. It's not a lander built out of humans. It's for humans.
All right, here we go. Throw it, get a big slingshot.
Hey, Fred.
Yeah.
Hang on. Hold my beer and watch this.
Yeah. Anyway, you can go read more about it. There's a really cool picture and the tweet of what looks like the Starship design that we all know, sitting on the moon, which is pretty cool.
Straight out of a 1950s sci-fi picture with the upright rocket on the moon.
Isn't that amazing?
Now, this is a stepping stone to their mission to Mars, but it doesn't mean that just because Elon Musk and SpaceX won the moon contract that they're going to win the Mars contract. That's a separate bidding process entirely.
Do they need a contract to go to Mars?
Someone's got to pay for it.
Well, I'm just saying, Elon's been talking about, hey, this is my vision. This is what I want to do.
I'm thinking there are better things we not against exploration, but why do we need to send humans to Mars? Why?
You want to get, why?
Why? For the amount of money, you could help a lot more humans here on Earth. We got to fix this planet first.
No, I see merits in both, but no, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I mean,
$2.9 billion. You know what that could fix here on Earth? That's just
well,
to get to the moon.
The problem is that money is still on Earth right now, and it's not doing anything.
But it could.
And it could also send them to Mars. I mean, or the moon. They're not using it for anything but space stuff, so.
No, but you're missing the point entirely.
I get the point. I'm just saying the money is sitting here.
Right.
Right now.
And if Elon Musk said, rather than trying to go to Mars, maybe we could clean up the ocean for $2.9 billion.
Maybe you can fly Starship over the ocean and extract the plastic as it goes.
And then take it to Mars and build a plastic house.
Then take it to Mars. There we go. All right. That's our back of the napkin plan for Mars. There you go.
There's a reason why we don't
have
that.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you that there's probably better ways to spend this money. The other curiosity of me, part of me, my head wants to see people go on Mars. So I'm a little torn, but I understand what you're saying.
John Miller Jr. says $2.9 billion. That could buy 5 graphics cards, 5 and half of a PS5.
More like 4.5. Sorry. Part of a PS5. Yeah.
One of the games. If you chip in with another buddy. All right.
Yeah, let's go in halfers.
Let's get into the chat room.
Hey, wait a minute. You would tell me part of you would like to see people on Mars, though. I'd be curious. I mean, it'd be interesting, right?
I wouldn't want to be one of the people on Mars. Did you watch The Martian?
I have.
That's a documentary, man.
Right. I'm just asking you. I know the science part of you would be curious enough to see what.
I am curious, but I'm also curious to find out what happens with a lot of things that are dangerous or could be done at a later date. There's no harm in saying let's explore Mars in 50 years once we get global warming under control.
So are you okay with them sending robots there?
Yeah. Go send some robots. Do your research. What do we need to risk human lives for that a robot can't figure out first? It's not like we're going to go up there and grow potatoes.
Yeah. Right. Maybe. Did you not see The Martian?
That was the reference. Obviously, I did. Okay. The only person I see in Facebook is John Miller Jr.
Thanks.
He's giving us the doo-doo potatoes. And I know whoever's in YouTube has not spoken up. So congratulations, everybody, for joining us live Saturday at 9:30 Eastern, Sunday at 9:30 Eastern time, where we hang out, Craig and I round up some random stories and we talk about them and throw in some other odd facts and you get Technorama. It's the food processor of the internet. Join us.
I don't think we ever referred to ourselves as a food processor, but okay.
When I was young and I first heard the term word processor, I thought that's what it was. Like, well, if a food processor, you throw all this stuff in and it mashes it together, that must be what a word processor is.
Right.
It's like a typewriter that just jumbles up your words real good. All right, where are we next? Remember when? Okay. And remember when? Billions, not 2.9 billion, but billions of Tyrannosaurus rexes. Are they rexes or rexi?
Rexi. Sure. Let's go with rexes. They put that's what they call
it's like
it here.
Cactuses or octopuses or rexes. Once they once roamed the earth, lots and lots of them. This is from WREG.com or reg or WREG. We're not sure. They roamed through storybooks, movies, and our imaginations, and now scientists say Tyrannosaurus rexes were positively abundant when they still walked the earth. I'm intrigued on this one because usually apex predators, well, you know, if you take billions of years, if you had one every year, that would work. According to a new study published in the journal Science, approximately 2.5 billion T-Rexes in total have lived on the planet. The scientists estimate that there were about 20,000 on the Earth at any given time. That sounds plausible. You know, you think about how many lions there are or sharks. The study data suggests that only one per 80 million T-Rex skeletons have been recovered. So they think there's 80 million in the ground? Because it's not easy to get something petrified.
Well, out of 2.5 billion, I could imagine that 80 would have survived somewhere in the ground.
Maybe.
Spread out.
Fossilization is a delicate procedure. I've done it. The research.
I'm looking at it.
Every morning I get up and my back is fossilized.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I'm looking at it right here. Chuck.
Two of them. Two of them right there. The researchers calculated the T-Rex population over 127,000 generations by taking into account their body sizes, sexual maturation, and their energy needs. The calculation framework can be applied to any taxon with the right data, the University of California, Berkeley scientist said. It also opens the door for other types of analysis. So the study says, such as determining the rarity, geographic restrictions, and time span of various species. Interesting. So there were a whole lot of them at one point, and there may be more to find, but you have to do some digging for that one.
Hey, by the way, just to update our shout out to the chat room, Amelia Bowen.
Yay!
Amy chimed in, and Mike Robeson, he jumped in too and said,
thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think he was referring to the T-Rexes. He said they wandered around and went moo.
No, that's what they ate. The hadrosaurs went moo.
Burgers tonight, huh? Again. All right.
Eyes in front, predator. Eyes on side, prey. Generally how nature went.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This show is brought to you by you, which means it's time to roll that wonderful music. Yes, it's the reading of the patrons. One of my favorite parts of this show. Actually, every part is my favorite part. Yeah. Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, who just joined us in the chat. Avner Braverman, thank you very much. Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dan D. Mann, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis. We're still on the same 27 people. We really need that last square filled in to get Craig's OCD under control.
I know. It's really getting to me. Hurry up.
Gary Lindros, Harold McKinster. We don't know what he's going to do if he doesn't have that last one filled in. Although, if we have 27, we could do a 9x3. So,
right.
It sounds like a cake pan or something. Very skinny cake man, but it's cake. John Clifford, John Noble, Yorga Shrawan, Christina, thank you very much. Kyle Nishioka and Leon and Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. All of you are greatly appreciated because you keep this show going. And in return, we not only read your name in honor every episode, but we also have another show that we record off on the side. It's the backstage pass to Technorama and what Craig and Chuck get up to when they're not recording the real Technorama. Little insight to that. We love to share it with you, but in order to do that, you must go over to patreon.com/Technorama podcast, and for as little as $1 a show. That's very much appreciated. I know some people just can't spare that right now, but if you are so inclined and you think this show is entertaining or should be banned from the internet, wait, that wasn't in the script.
Wait, what? You don't ban people from the internet.
Go over to patreon.com/Technorama podcast and sign up. That's all you got to do. It's pretty easy. And we occasionally, when we get back to traveling, we send postcards to our wonderful patrons as well. So that is all we have for that. Let's kill that music, hit that button, turn that off, and continue on with what's next? Pass me the remote. That's the blue button here. I got a few things to put in here.
Here, I'll hand you my phone.
What?
There you go.
Podcasting for dummies.
The transporter did it again. Gee, it changed it.
A transporter accident? That never happens.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Pass me the road. I watched a couple of things. One is the movie on Netflix called Contiki, which is the sort of documentary about Thor Heyerdahl. He's the man who believed back in the 30s that Polynesia was settled by people from Peru because the currents flow from east to west at that part of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Or excuse me. Yeah. East to west. And the popular theory was that no. Polynesia was settled by people from Asia coming from west to east. And there were also a number of other things that kind of led him to this. He said, wait a minute, there's similar artifacts and vegetation and whatnot. So they must have brought that with them, right? Because they were found in Peru. But he had a whole bunch of trouble finding funding. And then, of course, he finally gets the funding. He builds this giant raft and goes over. Once he, spoiler alert, they made it.
Oh, man, I was going to watch it too.
This was like in 1947. And he went on to do another rafting expedition called Ra, where, you know, there's this theory about Egyptians have pyramids and Mesoamericans had pyramids. So he was kind of doing that. But it was interesting at the end because they said his expedition opened up this whole new age of exploration about possibilities. And many of the astronauts in the 60s were inspired by the work he did. And that one expedition, 1947, when he sailed his raft out onto the ocean, which was kind of like, you know, sailing your space capsule out into space. Yeah, yeah. That was kind of inspirational as you read the, you know, kind of what they went on and did. So the six people that were on that show. And there were some tense moments in there with storms and sharks. And yeah, it was kind of white knuckle for a while. And the weight of what he did, he's like, man, did I just sentence all these people to their death by going out on this?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of silent moments and a lot of glaring and staring like, oh man, if you could hear their thoughts right now. So I liked it.
Was there video from the actual thing? You said,
oh, there was some at the end. They showed some of the video. They did bring a movie camera along and,
on the original exposition
In 1947. So they had some of that original footage at the end.
It's like where it's black and white and they're,
yeah,
you know, doing stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, full hauling up the sails and doing all that kind of stuff.
Right.
One of the other shows that I started watching, long overdue, I know, and I'm watching them out of order, is Stargate Atlantis, which is on Hulu. Now, I originally, back in, what was it, 2010 or 9 or somewhere in there, I watched the two seasons of SGU when they came out. Loved that show. Sorry it ended at two seasons. I would have loved to have seen more. And then said, you know, I kind of should really go back into the franchise. So what was it, about 2015, 16, something like that, I watched SG-1.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoyed that. Starts out a little cheesy. The effects are, you know, mid-90s.
Right, right.
But it was, 10 seasons or something, and got better. I liked the whole story arc as it went. The Stargate Atlantis is to SG-1 what Voyager is to TNG, for you Star Trek fans. It's like a companion show that forks off and takes its own separate storyline.
Okay. So, all right.
I enjoy it. I think the effects hold up a little bit better because it ran from like 2004, 2005 for 4 or 5 seasons. I got to get the numbers right here. I know I've got a long journey to go. I'm about halfway through season 1 right now. So they've established the premise of what the challenge is, who the enemy is, where the allies are, and you're starting to get the common problems out of the way. Like, we need food.
Right.
We're stuck in the Pegasus Galaxy. Well,
they're in Atlantis. They can go fishing, right?
No, there's a major issue that I spotted right in I think the first episode is a two-parter. Okay. And the city of Atlantis is underwater, and they trigger it to rise up to the surface. And it's been down there for 10,000 years. It comes up, they walk out on the patio. It's perfectly clear, like cleaner than a hotel maid would have made it. So
wow.
Either this ocean is extremely sterile and there's no corrosion at all.
There's no reef or anything that's grown over it.
No barnacles, no moss, yeah. No nothing. Yeah. So I thought that was a little impractical. Or they had electrolysis to just keep that stuff all away. You know, that would have been nice. So,
well, I think that was part of your 90s special effects. Just make it clean.
Yeah.
You know how long it'll take to make it, dirty it up.
This patio's great. Let's get some coffee out here.
Yeah.
So, I am enjoying it. The character lineup is pretty strong. I don't have all the actors' names memorized yet, but enjoying it. Enjoying it. It's got a different vibe than SG-1. They're obviously going through Stargates, like, because that's kind of what they do on Stargate shows.
Right.
So Hulu, Stargate Atlantis. The final one, which we just about finished tonight, but I had to start the podcast, is a 6 episode from 2012 of the Napoleon Dynamite cartoon.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a few episodes, but I haven't seen the whole thing.
There's 6 of them. They have the original actors doing the voices.
Mm-hmm.
How this escaped me for the last 9 years, I don't know.
Oh, I knew it existed. I'm sorry. Loud. I should have said something to you.
Yeah, no, I was laughing out loud. There are some funny things.
It's really like more.
Yes.
More of the movie.
And it's a continuation of where the movie left off, because Pedro is the class president, and he's occasionally, they cut to him and he's in his little office with a desk. I'm under a lot of stress here, Napoleon. Yeah. I have a lot of big decisions to make. And these kids come in and go, Pedro, what do you think about this sign for our pep rally? And it says, like, go Predator. I forget what the school, go Preston or something. And he goes, right. I like it, but I don't love it. Oh, you're impossible. You know, it's really funny. Same actors, same storyline, same. If you like Napoleon Dynamite movie, go watch this. If you thought Napoleon Dynamite was stupid, you'll probably think the cartoons are stupid as well. So there you go. That's your delineation. More fun. I was laughing out loud at this at a number of places. The one that got me that I have to use with either you or Jason or somebody when we get back to doing our conferences at work.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Craig, tie this rope around your waist. Because they were going to the Future Farmers Association, which Napoleon is the champion for the past several years.
Right.
Of answering these questions and being the future farmer. He goes, hey, Pedro, tie this rope around your waist. He goes, what for? Because I don't want us to get separated. I'm a big star here, and I'm going to get mobbed.
Damn. Right.
And as soon as they step off the bus, they're both hoisted above on everybody's shoulders.
Yeah.
He goes, well, I ain't never been this high in the air before.
Oh, my God. I am going to go finish that. That's pretty good.
It is funny. Lots of funny moments in that. At least I thought so.
I do have something I want to mention.
Yes.
And I told you I was watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yes.
And it's on episode five. It's the penultimate episode. And the next one, of course, is the finale for this season.
Yep.
I think they're doing a second season. We'll see. But there was a great moment in this episode. Sam is the Falcon.
Yep.
He's dealing with a lot of stuff weighing on him about taking up Captain America's mantle. And then you have Bucky, who is dealing with all of his stuff as the Winter Soldier, having done all these terrible things over through the years, being controlled, you know, mind controlled. And there's a lot of great action and all that stuff. But the really moment that shined for me was just them both standing there talking, and they were working through both their problems at the same, you know, and just a conversation. It was such a great moment. I loved it. I had to go back and watch that bit again. But yeah, it's really turned out to be a really good show. I think the last episode is going to be pretty action packed because they got to wrap everything up. But it has been well worth wait. It's been well worth for the wait for the show. But that moment, you'll see them take a moment, go watch that, and you'll see them talking about it's when they're practicing throwing the frisbee, the Captain America's shield, and it's bouncing off some trees, and they're mm-hmm. catching it, and they're just sitting there talking. It's almost like they're throwing a ball, you know, and just hashing
except
out.
Except it's
some
Captain
stuff.
America's shield.
It is, but but it's just like they're, you know, tossing a baseball and having a conversation. It's great. I love that moment. So anyway, just wanted to bring that up.
Saw the trailer. Looked very enjoyable.
It is. It's a great show.
All right. Do we have time for the Geek Library? We do. We've got a couple minutes
well,
left.
They're just a couple of videos. We'll just talk about them real quick. So sure. I posted this one video. It's I finally got the American C64 version.
Yep.
And I was like, what is he talking about? So I went and looked, and it wasn't the vintage Commodore 64. They actually came out with a full-size Commodore 64 with working keyboard, the whole thing. It looks about the same color as the original.
Yeah.
I think the function keys were slightly more beige than that grayish brown that they had, but has USB ports, has HDMI out, has a bunch of Commodore games in it already. So you can just pull it up and do a carousel and go play some games. Mm-hmm. You can drop into a Commodore 64, environment and start coding away. It also has the VIC-20. Support, so which is not much different from Commodore, but there are some differences. You can drop into that. It's really a good deal. I saw I think it was around less than a couple hundred bucks. It was like $169 or something like that.
Whoa, the resolution on this thing is way too high.
But anyway, go watch the video. He's given a walk through the whole thing.
Boulder Dash. Really cool. I played Boulder Dash on the Apple for way too long.
Oh, Boulder Dash. That was a great game. They came out with a Commodore 64 Mini a year or two ago. Doesn't have a functional keyboard or anything because it's tiny. But this is, if you want to do a little programming and playing around with it, it's fantastic. So, and also this next video was it's a Blockbuster video visualization map of over the years. And it shows when they started and their locations.
Oh my goodness.
And you can see until, you know, the last one, which is still there standing.
Let's see. December 8, it was in 87. A few dots show up. Late 87, they had about 115 stores. Late 88, 365. The months are cruising by. Dots are showing up. Late 89, 950 stores. 1,200, 1,300, 1,300 in beginning of 91, 1,700. Oh, man, I should invest in this.
Hey, in 2003, they had 5,000 stores.
This video is 3 minutes long. All right. Let's cut to the chase. Where's the good stuff?
But around 2009, you can start seeing the numbers start to fall.
Oh, yeah. There's like 5,000 stores was the high number. That was the high watermark.
Yeah.
Where didn't they have one?
They had one almost everywhere. Yep.
Oh, this is going to be sad because you know how the story ends.
You know, it's funny.
Oh, they didn't have Alaska on here.
No, they don't.
That's no
You know, it's funny fair. Here in town where one of the Blockbusters used to be.
Yeah.
There's a new place in there, but it's a carpet flooring company. But the sign outside is also rectangular and sideways. It's like they left the sign and just left the framing, but put a new sign in there.
For what? What's in there now?
Like a flooring company. I mean, it looks just like the Blockbuster sign, except for
it's even got the ragged edge.
I'll have to take a picture of it and show you.
Apparently, anyway. The one in Oregon that's still there started in late 88 or early 88. Early 88. And they converted, weren't they, like Pacific Video at first? If you haven't seen the Blockbuster show on YouTube, go watch that. I don't know if we covered that one yet or not.
We did. I talked about it. I reviewed it, but yeah, please go see it. I thought it was pretty interesting. Yep.
Okay, that takes us to the end of our show. Thank you very much again for everybody who showed up. Did we have any comments at the end? That is asteroid hit pretty hard, guys.
He was referring to the T-Rexes.
Must have been the T-Rexes. Dhruv is out there. Just woke up. Good morning.
Good morning, Dhruv.
As we are just about to end the show. Sorry about that, Dhruv. We'll have to schedule our show around your alarm clock, apparently.
Yeah, right.
Wait a minute. It's 8 a.m. He's sleeping in today. Come on, get to work. It's Monday morning. Chop, chop. It's like somebody's got a case of the Mondays. All right, question of the week is, what is a life hack that seems fake, but is a true lifesaver? Do you want my answer now, or do you want to wait till next week?
No, I'll save it for next week.
Okay. I have a couple of them, but one of them is from my teenage years. All right,
go ahead and share one. Go ahead and share one then.
Spit!
What?
when your mask fogs up when you're snorkeling or scuba diving, you can spit into your mask, rinse it out. Because really, to reduce the fog, you need to reduce the surface tension of the water. And your saliva reduces that surface tension. You could also use dish soap or some people say toothpaste, not the minty kind.
So, I can't see, though. It's
also, shaving cream apparently does it, too, but...
Well, the idea is to put it on and then kind of wipe it off a little bit so you can still see, right?
Yes, you want, because if you rinse all your stuff out, you won't have anything to, you need like that slippery sheen of water, but you can still see through it. Yep.
Well, I just get the little ones with little windshield wipers.
On the inside of your mask.
Sure. Yeah, that's right.
And with that, do you have one?
Oh,
not yet. He needs time to think about it.
I had a couple. No, I'm going to save mine.
Okay. So thank you very much, everybody. We will talk to you again soon. We are going to record our Patreon show, which will come out on Monday. This show comes out on Wednesdays. If you're listening to it in audio format, you know that already. Please subscribe, tell a friend, and let's do the other particulars that we've got. Reach us on the listener line like John Miller Jr. did, now that we've been nagging him long enough.
All right, so now it's somebody else's turn.
Who are we going to nag now?
I think Mike Robeson. He should. Amy's called in, so.
Amy's called.
Yeah, it's Mike's turn.
I mean, we only have so many listeners.
Yeah, we'll be back to John in no time.
707-530-2428 is how you can get a hold of us. Put that in your speed dial. Then when you get a crazy idea, call us. Wait, no, maybe that's not such a good idea. We can screen them. Technorama@chuckchat.com is how Kyle got a hold of us earlier, Mad Marv. So technorama@chuckchat.com. Until next week, everybody take care, stay safe, and give me a binary high five, Craig.
All right, 101. Bye.